Those who have seen the very first episode of this series, I tried to put forward the idea of, does America want the world? And as in that episode, I have tried to argue that throughout at least the first 150 years of America's history, so roughly from the 1700s up to, say, the World War 19, late 30s, throughout a very, very long period, actually, the school of thought in America that did not really want to engage in international politics, that wanted to isolate America behind the oceans, the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific Ocean, was by far more prevalent school of thought than those who actually wanted to engage with the world. There was another school of thought from the very early days, actually, that still saw America as a country with a mission. Americans never believed, at least in the early days of the US, that America is destined to be an empire. Actually, in many ways, it was seen as almost an insult to say that, because America had internalized this idea that America is a force for goodness, that America has a certain mission in the world, a good mission in the world, in the American mindset, in the American psyche. But from the Second World War until more or less now, the two ideas, do we engage with the world, do we isolate ourselves, have been in the limelight with, of course, the idea or the school of thought that says we are to engage in the world, we are even to shape the world, has been gaining, of course, prevalence, and people will say, many people will correctly say, has been having the upper hand in American foreign policy. The question, however, is today, when the confrontation between China and America is beginning, where does the world stand, more or less, in that nascent confrontation? To my mind, the most important region in that nascent confrontation, at the beginning of this confrontation, is East Asia. Primarily, the areas surrounding the East China Sea and the South China Sea. Why? Because for decades, the United States, especially the last 4 or 5 decades of the 20th century, so after the Second World War and the past 20 years, the beginning of the 21st century, America has built massive presence, military, political, economic presence in that area. And in addition to that, America has built a set of alliances in that part of the world that are very strategic for America, with Japan, for example, with South Korea, for example. These are not just countries America has good relationships with. These are very close allies of America in its global perspective. But those countries are in exactly the area, East China Sea, the very close area of the Pacific to China, that is in the very first circle of expansion of China, meaning that if China were to get out of its borders, and of course China will get out of its borders, it's a rising superpower, of course, in this case, China will begin to build influence in the area, in its immediate neighborhood, what in the Chinese mindset is usually referred to as the first circle of going out of our borders. Why is this important? Because the same region, that part of the Pacific Ocean, very close to the East China Sea, the South China Sea, is the very first part in the Chinese neighborhood that when China is to get out of its own borders, and it will get out of its own borders, of course, it's a rising superpower, that's the area, the neighborhood that it will attempt to build presence in. Some would say attempt to build not just political presence, but strategic presence, military presence. And therefore, this leads to a question. For countries that have had for decades very important relationships with the US, such as Japan, such as South Korea, such as the Philippines. What will be their choices in that, I would not say immediate, but relatively short or medium term, when they see China beginning to expand in their region, while the US have built this colossal presence for a very long time. So the choices of these countries will be, I think, one of the most important dynamics in international relations in that nascent confrontation between the two superpowers. In Asia, another player is very important, and that is Australia. Australia, by history, is part of the West. By default, its history, very, very large part of its demographics makes it part of the West. Those who have an interest in international relations might have heard about something called UKOS. The idea basically is Australia, the UK, and the US coming together in a very important strategic alliance, or coming together in the area around Australia, basically the southern part of the Pacific. And of course, it's some sort of a containment strategy, a hedging strategy, deterrence strategy, whatever the word is, to basically have this Western presence in the Pacific, knowing that China in the short or the medium term will expand beyond its immediate neighborhood, will expand in the Pacific. So the US and the UK partnered with Australia to build that presence. But Australia has very important economic relationships with China, massively important relationships, economic. And if Australia sees itself as an Asian or Asian Pacific nation, then of course China is an extremely important player in its own foreign policy by default, because China is obviously a mammoth in Asia. And therefore, one of the countries whose choices will be consequential, as they say, basically, will be very important in the international relations of that region will be Australia, because of these conflicting orientations in its foreign policy. So another country to pay attention to. How does it see its relationship with the United States versus with China? The third player in Asia that is very important to keep an eye on in that dynamic is India. India is of colossal importance on so many levels. Number one, it's the largest population in the world. It has overtaken China as the largest demography in the world. That by itself gives it immense weight. The second reason India is particularly important is that India is a democracy. India is the largest democracy in the world. That carries weight. 1.3, 1.4 billion people, when they go to elect someone, that's by itself a certain political, some might even say strategic weight. And those interested, India has a very important parliamentary elections or legislative elections in May 2024. That gives it weight. Number three, India is a nuclear power. India militarily is not a small country. It's a very important country militarily, not just in its neighborhood in the Indian subcontinent, but in Asia as a whole. Add to that, that India, of course, is a very important player in the world of technology and therefore the global economy. Number one, through its own experts, technological experts. But number two, because arguably the most important companies in the world, in information technology, in, well, computer, all this world of computer and technology and informatics and all of that, the Indian diaspora in the West, and primarily in the US, is of immense importance and influence in that domain. The CEOs of probably the top 20 companies in information technology come from an Indian descent, have major social links to India. So India economically is very important. Also, it's a big market. What I'm trying to say is India by itself is a major, major player in global politics, particularly in Asia. India, especially over the past 10 years under Prime Minister Narendra Modi, has been building quite close relationships with America. For those interested, Narendra Modi was in the US, I can't remember which month exactly, but relatively recently, towards the end of 2023, and he was given an incredible audience and presence at the American Congress. And not only that, strategically, one can argue that India has been actively trying to build closer, deeper relationships with the United States. However, India for decades has been very close to Russia. A lot of the armaments, the weaponry of the Indian army has been based on Russian productions. India is one of the founding members of the non-alignment movement, which has always tried to have an independent position in the East-West confrontation. Add to that, that India and China have quite an interesting history. They actually went to war against each other. They have territorial disputes between them. So a very long story short, the choices of India with regard to the United States, America, and China are of immense importance given the dynamics of Indian relationships with both players and the importance of India. Europe is the second area we'll look at. And Europe is arguably easier than Asia to look at, because many people will say, when it comes to Western Europe, they are the closest allies of the United States. Culturally, of course, geostrategically part of the West. The choices of the populations, of course, will be culturally and socially oriented and going towards the West as opposed to the rise of China that many people in Europe actually are quite apprehensive about. And at the end of the day, the vast majority of Western Europe are members of NATO, the North Atlantic Alliance, by far the most important and arguably the most successful military alliance in the entire world, which, by the way, celebrates 75 years at its creation this year, 2024. Some people will say, so obviously, of course, Europe is in the side or on the side of America, especially that Central and Eastern Europe, so countries such as Poland, the Czech Republic, Czechia, Slovakia, and others, are countries that have suffered a lot when they were under the Soviet Union, and in the past 20, 30 years, or 30 years, have been really trying to truly integrate themselves with and in the West, with a lot of longing and strong interest in America. So some people might say, especially with Eastern and West, Eastern and Central Europe, very oriented towards America, then of course, Europe is on the side of America. And I agree, but we have to keep into consideration the economic aspect. The vast majority of the really powerful, economically powerful European countries, for them, China is by far the most important market, and especially growing market. So if you are an exporter, a European exporter, it is very difficult to internalize in your calculus, in the way you look at the world, that China is an opponent. Because if you arrive at that conclusion, you incur economic costs to that choice. So it's easier to think of where Europe will stand in that nascent confrontation, easier to think what Europe wants, but if you include the economic aspect, you start to find that the European decision-making process is far from straightforward. Latin America is very interesting to look at, because from the American perspective, Latin America is more or less the backyard of the United States. And actually, for those interested in the history of American politics, there is a very famous concept called the Monroe Doctrine. It refers to an American president, Monroe. Without going into too much detail, the Monroe Doctrine is basically about the idea that the Western Hemisphere, so Northern America and Southern America, is an American sphere of interest, sphere of influence, and therefore it is not acceptable from an American perspective that any country, even European countries, to have real strategic presence or political influence in North America or even Latin America, let alone that a country like China has an influence there. So for America, this is its backyard. It's very important for us. If you follow the Monroe Doctrine, we won't accept even any European presence, let alone Asian or Chinese presence. However, if you look at Latin American or Southern American politics in the past 20 years, some of the most important stars, some of the most important politicians in that part of the world, such as in Venezuela, Chavez, or President Maduro, now in Brazil, President Lula da Silva, many very important, influential figures in the politics of Southern America or South America were not necessarily at all oriented towards becoming strong players into the Western camp. No, they actually, some of them had real reservations against American foreign policy. None of them want to jump into the Chinese camp. But what I'm trying to say is that if you look at the global map and what does the world want in this nascent confrontation, even Latin America or South America, which is traditionally, from the American perspective, the backyard, even there, the choices are far from easy to predict, far from clear. In the Middle East, where I sit, it is quite a complicated story because many people will say popular feelings in the Middle East, particularly in the Arab world, are not to be part of the Western camp, far from it. However, when you look at the strategic interests, the real drivers of not just the geopolitics of the Middle East, but the political economy of the Middle East, what really makes the economy work, the most important forces in the economy, you find that it boils down to industries such as energy, oil and gas. And not just because of the money that oil and gas generate, but because they have been, that industry, that product has been really at the very heart of the political economy of the entire region for at least the past half century, at least. Some would say even 70, 80 years. And when you zoom in or zoom on oil and gas, you start to realize that the protection of the most important assets, oil and gas assets, in the region, and the maritime channels that gets that oil to the global market are under what is usually referred to as the Pax Americana, the American way or American power of maintaining peace, American umbrella over the global economy. So the protection of these assets is basically, has been for decades, effectively under that Pax Americana, that American power. So even in the Middle East, if some people say, but popular feelings are against the Western camp or against American foreign policy or whatever it is, the realities of geopolitics and the political economy are not necessarily in leading to that conclusion. So even the choices of countries in the Middle East and North Africa are far from clear. They're also trying to have balances in this nascent confrontation between America and China. To summarize, does the world want America? It's a very simple title, but the idea I was trying to convey here is that everywhere you look, whether in the most important theaters of operations, as they say in geopolitics, Asia, East Asia in particular, or in faraway areas such as South America, the choices are not clear. The choices are quite complicated. And therefore, if you are interested in foreign policy, in geostrategy, in international relations, it is interesting to start to think about these choices from the perspectives of the players.